Chapter 15. Iron Without. 000.M31 Locos Olympia. For the last time, Perturabo returned home. The Palace of Locos lay open to him. The plaza before it was cratered, riven with cracks, its fine marble flagging pulverizing into dust. The gates were blown wide open, and the relief panels of gold and silver that had adorned the gates lay twisted on the steps. Perturabo kicked them aside as he strode through the blackened archway. Gunfire echoed at his back. Past the gates, the damage to the palace was less obvious. Its halls were dusty and deserted. The rich had fled. They were always the first to go. Sifts of dust drifted down from the ceiling with every explosion going off in the streets outside, and the glass was cracked in its fine windows. But in the main, the building was unmarked. For the time being, it remained the way he remembered it. Perturabo recalled the first day he had been brought here. How mighty the great stone edifice had looked to his uneducated eyes. Now he knew more of the galaxy. It seemed as rude as a grox shed, and he disdained its attempt at glory. Many times he had offered to build Damocos a palace that the ruler of Locos deserved, only to be declined. Perturabo fulminated on the snub still, but then he had always misunderstood his foster father. In the middle of the hall was a bier, carved in stone with marvellous skill, as was the Olympian way. A coffin of fine rock crystal, part melted and reconstituted to make panes of diamond-hard glass, rested atop it. Within it, on cushions of the finest velvet, slept the preserved corpse of Damocos, lately tyrant of Locos and the imperial satrap of Olympia. Perturabo walked reverently to the coffin, though he had exhibited little deference to his foster father during the tyrant's long life. Perturabo's huge armoured boots crunched on the scattering of debris that had fallen from the roof, the weight of his battle plate crushing it to powder. He laid his hand upon the lid with the faintest metallic click. Framed in the gun barrels of his wrist cannons was the tyrant's face, shrunken and sallow with great age. Damocos had lived a very long time. This diminution in stature aside, his years had not weighed heavily on him. His corpse wore no augmetics and had none of the horrifying alterations one could find among the Mechanicum. He was simply very old, and in spite of that, a proud patriarch of Locos still. Perturabo sighed deeply. His anger flowed out of him. The smallest noise echoed boldly in the palace hall. The thunderous sounds of destruction outside, from the thump of shells to the whooping of air displaced by energy weapons, struggled to penetrate the building's thick walls. An implacable silence had hold of the place, and would not be easily broken by bombs or by rage. Perturabo had both these things in plenitude, and had in fact relied on them for too long. His higher faculties had become blunted by war. The silence, overlaid though it was upon a muffled symphony of destruction, was welcome.
"Father," he said, and closed his eyes. "What a pass we find ourselves at."
"You never called him that when he was alive. Why do you do it now?"
Beneath the age-cracked whisper was a voice he recognized. Caliphony. Perturabo looked up. His foster sister occupied the throne of Locos, sat between the statues of the twin god-kings, now made quaint by changing times. Bent with age, Caliphony looked older than Damocos by far. Perturabo found her appearance profoundly shocking. His foster sister, the arch, complicated and intelligent girl he had come close to loving, the only person he had ever felt that way for, save the Emperor himself, had become a hag, and it disgusted him.
"Sister," he said.
"So, now I am sister, and he is father. Only rebellion could bring such words from you. A pity."
A crackle of bolter fire popped like firecrackers some way off.
rebellion, said Perturabo. I should never have trusted you to rule your own affairs.
Please,
she said. She breathed hard between her sentences, her ancient lungs insufficient to power her words.
Do you think this is Father's fault?
He was agitating behind the scenes against me for years.
Trying to claw back a measure of the power he regarded as his. Never quite having the courage to acknowledge he held that power because of you,
she said. Perturabo looked down on the dead face of the man who had tried to be a father to him.
Accepting the governorship of his own world for the Imperium was an act of realpolitik, he said. He was too cynical to believe in the Emperor's dream sincerely. I never expected him to be completely faithful.
You knew what he was doing, and you did not stop him,
she said.
Why should I? He said. He was no threat. No one took his sedition seriously, not even him. I think it was a posture he adopted. He could never quite relinquish the role of strong man.
Perturabo smiled at a private memory.
His actions have unleashed devastation upon us,
she said.
He encouraged others to think that we could be free again. This is your fault.
And you? Do you think Olympia should be free?
Said Perturabo. He took two clanking steps towards his foster sister.
Thanks to you, I have been forced to think so. You were seen as a gift from the gods. Perhaps you were their judgment instead. You are a scourge on this world.
There are no gods,
said Perturabo, his voice whispering around the empty hall.
You deny that too hard, brother, she said.
All men decide their own fate. We all choose.
He pointed at her.
There are no demigods weaving our tapestry of life. We are all sinners, as the old Catharics of Terror had it, and we dwell in their hell.
Your nihilism is contemptible, brother,
said Caliphany.
But I think there is more to you than that. Perhaps you allowed Father his games out of affection and a desire to save his pride.
Perturabo looked down. He did not know if she were right or not.
And now he is dead, and his world is ruined.
Do not be too sorrowful. Demichos was a black-hearted man. He drowned my brother Heracon in a vat of wine when he tried to overthrow him. I can't say I was surprised. My brother was rash, a fool. Still, exile may have been more moderate.
He drowned him.
In wine,
she emphasized.
Did you spare no thought for what was occurring here while you were on your crusade?
What of Andos? He was always the best of you.
Perturabo privately felt Andos was better than him. Not in any objective sense, for Perturabo was superior to all men. But Andos was balanced in a way that he could never be. He envied him for that.
Andos refused the medicines of the Emperor, withdrew to his workshops and died 90 years ago. He would have been regarded as a master artisan in his lifetime, were it not for you. You overshadowed everything he ever did. But he did not complain.
I am sorry.
Why?
Said Caliphany.
You care for nothing but your dreams of utopia. What do real people matter? They get in the way of perfection.
I realized something recently,
the Primarch said suddenly, spurred to confession by his sister's words.
Demichos and I have common ground. The Imperium. It cannot work.
A snort of rueful laughter escaped him.
Demichos used to call the drawings I did, the plans, the treatises, all those things I worked on so earnestly. He used to call them my follies. It enraged me. It still does, if I'm truthful. But I begin to think maybe he was right. Maybe I inherited this tendency for grandiose plans from my real father.
Perturabo looked his sister dead in the eye, though it distressed him to stare at that wrinkled face.
The Imperium is my father's folly,
he continued.
I try to believe in it because I want it to be true. Just like I wanted my great buildings to be true, and the perfect societies that would use them to exist. But they cannot be. There is no such thing as perfection. Humanity is too chaotic to accept true order.
His facade of iron cracked. All the pain he had suffered, the isolation, the sense of abandonment that had dogged him all his life, the awful knowledge that he was a hawk among fowl that must restrain itself, the rejection of his brothers, the disregard of his father, was all concentrated in that moment. A single tear dared to roll down his cheek and was immediately resented, not only for the weakness that it showed, but because Perturabo wanted to cry for the broken dream, but he could not. The dream was what should be mourned, yet he could only cry for himself.
Wanting something to be does not make it so, he murmured.
Caliphany nodded.
You are weak. Badly forged iron looks strong, but is brittle as a dried reed. You never understood. People cannot be forced to live to an ideal. They must be led. People are messy and more complicated than your most profound calculations. You would build a perfect world, realizing at the final moment that its greatest mar were the people living within it. Now you would destroy them to save your creation. You are a memorial god, Bo. A tomb lord. You cannot achieve the impossible, so you rage like a child. And now you have unleashed this horror upon us because you can accept no compromise.
A heavy shell exploded near the palace, shaking the windows.
People do not listen, said Perturabo. They do not know what is good for them.
People do not bow to you without love, without respect. Great tyrants rule with the blessing of their people, effective ones through fear. But no tyrant ever achieved anything through indifference. You have sulked your way to damnation. You refuse to accept the love of the people. You were given the approbation of a god and an army to conquer the stars, and your first act was to decimate your legion.
They had failed,
he said, clenching his fist.
Failed to do what? Be the best? You waste your men to prove a point that needs no proof, and then grow angry when no one notices and praises your self-sacrifice. Your petulance has cost this planet whole generations of its youth, bringing your legion up to strength again and again. You have been an absent king. You have not seen the empty schools, the haunted mothers, the husbandless women.
My brother Kurz did worse, said Perturabo. I have come to set things right, not to destroy everything as he did. This punishment for treachery must be borne, but I will rebuild Olympia.
Comparing yourself to the worst of your brothers to excuse the enormity of your own crimes, said Caliphany. Listen to your words. Setting things to rights would be to cease recruiting and to hear the grievances of the people with forgiveness in your heart. Not this massacre. You slaughtered the delegation that came to see you, brother. In that moment, you lost. You lost everything. This was a good place once, bellicose and unfair, but it had its measure of beauty and nobility. You have destroyed all that. Why, brother?
I have other brothers now, my true siblings. I am not yours.
Caliphany wept, her tears tracking through the dust caking her face.
And do they care for you, as your family here did?
She asked.
Damocles never cared for me.
No, He only adopted you into his household and raised you as his son.
A calculated risk. He used me for his own ends.
He reached out to you over and over, she retorted. You are blind, as you are selfish. All wrapped up in yourself, in your own brilliance, in your difference.
Her voice changed, becoming quiet.
I cared for you.
What of it? He said coldly. What good did the affection of mortals ever do for me?
You always thought yourself superior to those around you.
I am, he said plainly. Look upon me, foster sister. I was made by the Emperor of all mankind, one of 20 sons forged to conquer the galaxy. You are withered, yet I am young. Of course I am superior.
Caliphany threw up her hand and looked away.
What happened to the man I knew who wished for no more war? The boy who drew such wonderful things?
Nobody wanted them, he said. The Emperor uses me for the most thankless tasks. My men are thrown against the worst of horrors, given the most grueling roles. We are divided, our talents ignored, our might reduced to splitting rock. My father ignores me. My men go unsung. Our triumphs are unremembered. My brothers mock me as my men bleed. Nobody cares.
Is that so?
She said.
Let me present a different hypothesis to you, brother. Use that fine mind of yours to judge its worth. Here is my version of the story. The Emperor of all mankind came here and found a son whom he valued. He saw an indomitable will with unshakable determination. He recognized that you would not give up, that you would rise to best any difficulty, that the tedious to you is as necessary a challenge to overcome as the glorious, and neither are to be shirked. Seeing these qualities in you, your father set you difficult tasks, not because he saw no value in you, but the exact opposite. He can trust no one else to get them done.
That is not true, said Perturabo,
though the acid of uncertainty began to eat at him.
He underestimates me. They all do.
Caliphany went on.
For a long time I thought you a fool to follow the Emperor. After all, he is a tyrant like all the rest. Look what he has done to you, I thought. He has brutalized you, and your wars have brutalized your home. But the truth is, brother, I have followed your campaigns carefully, and I noticed a pattern that disturbed and then alarmed me. Always you do things the most difficult way and in the most painful manner. You cultivate a martyr's complex, lurching from man to man, holding out your bleeding wrists so they might see how you hurt yourself. You brood in the shadows when all you want to do is scream, "Look at me!" You are too arrogant to win people over through effort. You expect people to notice you there in the half-darkness and point and shout out, "There! There is the great Perturabo! See how he labours without complaint!" You came to this court as a precocious child. Your abilities were so prodigious that nobody stopped to look at what you were becoming.
She got shakily to her feet. Exoskeletal braces whirred under her skirts.
Perturabo, this will anger you. But you never truly grew into a man.
I am not a man, he said. I am far more.
In those words is the poison that spoils your potential. It is not the Emperor who has driven this world into rebellion. It is not he who has held it back. It is you and your woeful egotism. Let me tell you, my brother, you
who affects to despise love so much, yet must certainly crave it over all other things. You are the biggest fool I have ever met."
With a cry of anger, Perturabo lunged forwards and grasped her by the throat. He raised her up until she was level with his eyes. She grabbed weakly at his wrist. Her mouth gaped for air.
"I am far from a fool, sister," he said. "I wished for more from life. I hope to build a better world for people. I have found that there is only brutality. Whether the court intrigues of the tyrants or this war to conquer the stars, it is all the same. Violence is the constant of human existence."
"It need not be,"
she choked.
"That is the violence within you speaking."
"No, no, no," he said soothingly. "I know my own limitations. My temper does not cloud my judgment. It focuses it. Humanity is venal and fractious. It can never be governed as one. Everything else is an impossible dream. There is no peace. There is no goodness."
He stroked away the hair from his sister's face with one hand, as he strangled her with the other.
"And in such a flawed universe, there can be no mercy for traitors."
She choked, trying and failing to speak. Coldly, Perturabo squeezed the life from her.
"You have lived long enough."
She kept her eyes locked with his as he throttled her. Even as her clawing hands became more desperate and a dreadful clicking sounded in her throat, she stared into his soul. What he saw reflected in her eyes was not fear, nor loathing, but pity. With a last minor effort, he crushed her neck. Her eyes rolled back to show the whites, and she judged him no more. He stared at her in hatred a moment, wavering on the brink of tearing her body to pieces. But a sob escaped his mouth unexpectedly, and he gently lowered her back into her throne. Her head lolled on its broken neck. Warning chimes peeped insistently from the augmetics concealed in her skirts. A trickle of blood ran from her mouth. Appalled at what he had done, Perturabo turned away. Dancing flamelight drew him to the windows of the palace. Ancient, cloudy glass blocked his view, so he methodically punched it out. Muffled weapons fire became the hellish noise of a city's sack. Locos burned. Flames leapt from every roof. The bombardment had ceased, though Perturabo had not noticed when, and screams had taken the place of the racket of shells and rockets. Sound conveyed the story of Locos's death. He heard weeping, cries for pity, isolated gunfire. But it was the noises the buildings made as they died that affected him the most. Stone cracked in the heat, suddenly fracturing. Roof beams collapsed with noises like human sighs, sending dancing clouds of cinders skywards. Pantiles shattered with musical, earthy tones. The mix of burning wood and flesh lent the air an acrid savour. Through gaps in the palace's curtain wall, he saw brief vignettes of suffering. A band of blood-smeared citizens ran amok in the streets, their eyes white in the crimson covering their faces. His own warriors worked their war of extermination methodically. A line of civilians, linked by chains, new slaves for his armies, were led past by a warsmith. There was a woman weeping on the pavement on the other side of the road, clutching a body in her arms. Fires blazed in the windows behind her, and she and the corpse were caked in pale brown ash. Tears made tracks down her cheeks as cleanly as carved lines. Perturabo could not hear her weeping over the din of pillage. A civilian, daubed with a crude iron warrior's skull, advanced on her slowly, and he slashed off her head with his sword. This was all Perturabo could see of his actions' consequences, a small gap in the fortifications he had surrounded himself with. He wondered if he would care more if the view were broader. The numbness inside him said not. Molten lead and gold ran in metallic rivers from the guttering of burning buildings. The fire leapt to devour more of his old home, ripping through dry buildings. No fire tamers came to put it out. The third and fourth precincts were entirely ablaze, and smoke rose already from the fifth and first. The second precinct spat sparks upwards, as if dragons prowled the narrow streets. Beyond Lokos, the sky was tainted with the fires of other realms. Columns of smoke marked the locations of sacked cities. Alongside the threads of white and brown, black columns rose from pyres where the bodies of millions were turning from flesh into ash. Lives gone. Not even their physical traces would remain, only handfuls of bone fragments and dust. Something broke in Perturabo then. A neglected but essential component of himself gave way. Not in his body, whose workings he understood well enough, but in that numinous part of his being some might call a soul. He experienced it as a physical sensation, as surely as if a tendon had broken in his leg. No physical collapse came from it, but a rush of emotion instead. There was pain there, and bewilderment, but there was something else that he had never felt before. Or perhaps he had, but had bottled it up so well that he no longer recognized the feeling. It took a moment for him to find the word. Perturabo was ashamed. He had thought he had felt shame after the rare defeats he had suffered, or the times he had been confronted by other petty failures. But what he had thought of as shame, he knew now as shallow, wounded pride that had served only to spur him on to anger. This was something else, something total. It overwhelmed him. The devastation he had made of his adopted home took on a terrible clarity, as if his senses, dulled by years of brutal siege warfare, had been sharpened anew so that he might appreciate what he had done. Blood. There was the smell of so much blood.
"I have become curse," he said hoarsely. His excuse was insanity. What is mine? My temper?
He sagged against the window, his weight so great the blocks shifted under his grasp, and the glass he had not yet broken cracked. He thought of what his brothers would think. He saw Caliphany was right, that he had stood aside and expected to be fated, becoming angry when he had not been. Falsely interpreting his brother's lack of praise for hatred of him, he had viciously set himself to proving himself worthy of their opprobrium. How he had succeeded.
"The Emperor will never forgive us this," he whispered to himself. "The Emperor will never forgive us this. The Emperor cannot forgive us this. Ever."
He repeated this over and over again, like he were a neophyte given the secret chants of the Legion for the first time. Perturabo had found a new, unbreakable litany. Forex found him like that hours later, after nightfall. The first captain entered through the broken gates, a cohort of dominators behind him.
"My lord," he said, "the city is ours. As you commanded, those suitable for service as serfs have been taken. We are in the process of testing appropriate youths for induction into the Legion. 4/5 of the population are enslaved or dead. The 29th Grand Battalion is in the process of constructing the warning pyre, so..."
"Stop," said Perturabo hoarsely. He turned a haunted face, lit by the capering light of the city's death, upon his first captain. His cheeks glistened.
"Enough."
Seeing the look upon his Primarch's face and the tears coursing down it, Forex turned back to his dominators.
"Leave us now."
The terminators clumped from the hall.
"My lord,"
said Forex, going to his Primarch's side. Encumbered by his cataphracti plate, he nevertheless forced himself to kneel.
"Forex, what have we done?"
Forex looked up into Perturabo's face. He had never seen him look that way. Not once, in all his years at the Lord of Iron's side, had he ever seen Perturabo express doubt.
"I have done as you asked, my lord, without question, as you have ever expected."
Perturabo looked out of the window, disappointed.
"That is not what I asked."
Forex remained on his knees, but the Primarch had nothing more to say to him. After 5 uncomfortable minutes, he stood. He muted his vox grill and opened a channel to the Iron Blood.
Send a Thunderhawk on these coordinates immediately. We are done here. Olympia is ours again. May they never forget it. The Primarch wishes to return to the fleet. See how it burns, whispered Perturabo. This was not the action of an honorable man. I have slain my foster sister and destroyed my own world. I swore an oath to the Emperor that I would spread his message and bring the worlds of mankind back into the fold of Terra. By this action, I have defied his edicts and come close to breaking my oath. For what iteration of imperial law allows this, when the issue might have been resolved through diplomacy? Their rebellion was my fault. And how did I react?
His voice dropped further, and he gripped Forex's pauldron. It buckled under the Primarch's frightening strength.
I am lost, my son. What have I become?
Forex did not know what to say. The same abyss that was consuming his master beckoned him. There were cracks in the Lord of Iron that no man other than Forex perhaps might see, but they were apparent to the first captain and they frightened him. Forex stood indecisively a moment, then came to a rapid decision. He re-engaged his vox grill.
What is done, my lord. My Primarch. We must leave. The others cannot see you like this.
His voice became more forceful.
My lord, you asked the impossible of your warriors, and they have delivered you this world without complaint and in the manner you demanded. If they see you doubtful like this, it will shake them to the core. Tell me not all of them did as I bade unquestioningly, said Perturabo.
Forex hesitated.
There were a few rebellious elements, my lord.
Perturabo smiled thinly, as if this were a good thing. The first captain continued.
They have been dealt with. Please, attend to my words. You must return to the fleet.
Perturabo blinked, coming back to his senses.
Yes. The Iron Blood, he said distractedly. First, convey my orders. The reaving will stop immediately. Leave the survivors we have not taken. Let them rebuild. Some of the Legion will not be easily restrained. Stress that the order is mine and that they will be slain if they do not obey, said Perturabo. What is a little more blood after all? As you command, my lord. Offer amnesty to those who will serve us as auxilia. There has been enough taking of freedom.
The howl of an approaching thunderhawk grew to a thunderous din outside. The ancient windows vibrated in the stone. Harsh white searchlights played over the shattered courtyard outside.
Come now.
Thorex held his hand out. Perturabo grasped it gratefully, then released it.
You are the most faithful of all my sons, the Primarch said. The most faithful. Come now, repeated Forex.
Together they left the palace and boarded the craft. The Thunderhawk's engines roared again, fading into the night. Darkness returned to the halls of Lokos, inhabited now only by dust and silence, and the ruined bodies of a daughter, her father, and a broken man's dreams.